Vancouver Island, a land full of rich, diverse cultures where you will find hippies and rednecks at the same local brew pub, blue-collar and white-collar camping side-by-side at the lakes, and old and young and everyone in between with one thing in common, we love our island. For those that journey into the wilderness, or maybe even just the local trails, or maybe they have a group of people they're responsible for, first aid is one of those essential tools in the kit when it comes to being a great leader in the wilderness. Today we are joined by David Woldridge, the founder and CEO of Ridge Wilderness Adventures, where they teach first aid and paddling all across Vancouver Island and BC. Years ago, I had the opportunity to take first aid. And I had a job where I had to get first aid. And so I was working in the restaurant industry at the time. And the owner had said, "All right, Benj, you're going to be our first aid guy." And I was like, "My first aid what?" And so he said, no, you're going to be the first aid guy. So I said, "Okay, what's that look like? What do I have to do?" "Well, you're going to have to take a course." Like, oh, not really a big fan of courses. Not really a big fan.
We get that a lot.
Oh, right? It's just not nearly as much fun as I think it's going to be. And so I take this course. And this course was not with our guest, but it was with a different outfit, which I will not name. And I hated every second of it. Absolutely. Like the 16 hours that the course required were absolutely brutal. Yep. To the point of I felt like I had PTSD's too strong, but I definitely had an experience where I did not want to go back.
Yes.
Sure enough, 2 years later, you got to recert and you got to do it. And then you got to do it another 2 years after that. And I just remember dreading it. Enter in, what was it? Was it 2015, 2016?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. It's got to be more than, yeah.
It's got to be right. Somewhere around there. 2015, 2016, we're working for Camp Bob, and me and some of the other team are going to go do this first aid course. And we're in the middle of the woods. It's going to be the Wilderness First Aid Advanced course, which we're really excited. It says advanced in it. We're like, yeah, this is our thing.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome. And we meet this fella who was standing there, and it was a freezing cold week.
It was chilly.
It was so cold.
I remember it. It was cold.
It was so cold. We had a fire going but still, it didn't matter. And the next 5 days were an absolute blur of madness and fun. And I learned way more about first aid than I ever could have hoped for. And that's all thanks to this week's guest, David Woldridge, owner and operator and fantastic first aider, paddler, human being from Ridge Wilderness. Thanks so much for joining us, Dave.
Excited to be here, buddy.
This is so fun. And honestly, been looking forward to having you on the show, telling a little bit about your story, hearing some of your story. But really, it's just an absolute privilege to have you here. So I guess I want to go is kind of your story for how you kind of got into. You've got such a diverse portfolio when it comes to the outdoors. It's something that you've been involved in, I think, pretty much since you were a kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And so tell us a little bit about David Woldridge and why he started a business called Ridge Wilderness.
Absolutely. Well, and first of all, the course that we did, you know, however many years ago that was my intro to the island.
Really?
That was the first course that I ran over here.
And you got stuck with us.
Yeah, I did. It was great.
Oh, gosh.
And I brought the family over, and it was at that point that we were like, you know, that's where we're going to move. So that was, first of all, that was kind of cool.
We get to take credit for that.
You do.
As well.
You totally do.
Oh,
yes.
Man, I didn't even know that.
And so I guess for me, you know, was always camping as a kid and then started paddling at 11. And we just had this coach show up to a summer camp that I was at. And he said, "Hey, look, you should come race with us." And so I started racing. And from 11 till 15, I did that and then realized I just wanted to be outside and be with people, forget the racing side. So, just got into, you know, guiding really early on. Had to make sure people came back on those trips. So we got into first aid.
Right? Return clientele is good.
Losing them means you don't come back. Yeah. So got into taking wilderness first aid really early on, like when I was 16. And yeah, after that, it was, you know, it just all kind of, you know, looking back seems like a pretty straight, you know, trajectory to here.
But still, like having to make that leap for, you know, it being something that you enjoyed, something that you liked, and then kind of growing a business from it,
sure.
Like that's pretty fantastic. And you're pretty much across the entire province at this point.
Absolutely, yeah.
So like where's kind of the farthest reaches of Ridge Wilderness right now?
Right now, well, we're doing, like, because of COVID, we're still, you know, kind of confined to Canada. But we, you know, we definitely run things all over all over Canada, as well as across seas when we're allowed to fly. But yeah, really, we focus on, you know, primarily Vancouver Island, BC, up to Yukon, and then, you know, hopefully over into Alberta soon.
Yeah, oh, totally. Just continue to grow the business.
That's right.
But I love the model. Like, I can't express that part enough, that as far as the way that you've done that. So like, where did that side come from? And it's hard for somebody listening in because they haven't maybe necessarily experienced your courses, but they're so unique.
Sure.
And so kind of talk about the way and the style that you bring to the first aid world.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, we've got a lot of people out teaching first aid that have amazing first aid skills. You know, they're great instructors. The difference really for us was simply saying we wanted to take something that normally isn't fun, which is first aid, and make it so people enjoyed themselves. Mm. And that happened, and I hate to say it, but with canoeing was the same thing. It was very strict, right? Mm. Very rigid. And we just...
elitist almost,
it is
right?
Elitist. It totally is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And so we said, you know, let's have a blast with this. And that seems to have, you know, it seemed to really have worked.
Yeah.
So I've ended up being able to build a business around that, which has been awesome.
Oh, so, so fun.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are some of the crazy experiences that you've had as far as, because you've worked as a first aid attendant as
yes.
well.
Yeah. So obviously, like, the way that we, you know, anybody starts is by doing it. And so for me, it was, you know, expedition trips or, you know, taking people out and making sure, like I said, that they came back.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the ones I remember early on was when we first bought our big canoes, my wife and friends and I, we traveled up Desolation Sound. Mm. It was an amazing program or amazing trip. And while we're up there, we hear this screaming from a yacht. Mm. And originally I was like, well, maybe this is somebody who just jumped in cold water. Right. So we took a look over and there's this fellow being held on the front deck of his sailboat and he's had the anchor chain run over his fingers.
Oh no.
And so we ended up paddling over and our first aid kit was a giant barrel. And on this like 50-foot sail yacht, they had one of those little metal, you know, ones with dried up band-aids in it. And so, yeah, we ended up helping this person out. And, you know, getting the Coast Guard in and, you know, this person was, you know, brought back. And after that, we were saying, like, there's a real lack of people who know what to do in those situations. Mm. And so we approached the Red Cross and they had a fledgling wilderness first aid course at the time. And so we started offering that and then started working with them to build it. And yeah.
And that was like at a national scale.
Yeah,
you were doing that too. Like you helped, you know, formulate how that all worked and stuff and the booklets and all of those pieces that came with it, which are, you know, incredible.
Yeah. Like that was a big honor actually to be asked. There was three of us for a long time, at least 2 or 3 years that ended up working on the present Red Cross Wilderness First Aid Program. And we built the Wilderness First Responder Program. And that was cool. Just to be in a room with those people was pretty
totally,
amazing.
Right? And so much experience, so many different stories, right?
Yeah. Like, I was like, I paddle. And there's these people who have, you know, just done some epic, you know, stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah. What goes into, like, putting that kind of a program, though, if you can flesh that out a little bit,
sure.
It would be really great. Like, what are some of the things that go into putting into, specifically wilderness, right? And so putting that first aid course together, what are some of the pieces that come together for
well,
that?
Well, and obviously I stepped into it after it being built, right? So we had, you know, Blair Doyle, who's kind of the godfather of wilderness first aid, and he's on the East Coast. And then at the time it was Kevin Holder. He was in, I believe, Manitoba. And so I got to join with those two gentlemen and... you know, we'd, you know, fly to Toronto and then we'd just do like these epic, you know, 3-day, you know, crazy long hours of just poring over, you know, what were the present recommendations for first aid? What should we be building with this? How can we put it together? How does that learner receive it? And that was maybe one of my, that was a really amazing experience to be in this room with those two people. And then all the individuals that work on like the professional rescuer stuff and just their background, it was a blessing for sure.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
So many diverse backgrounds to be able to put all that together, right?
Yeah.
And be able to do that on a national level and put that together. It's so awesome.
Yeah.
So how big is the team right now as far as what you're doing here in BC?
What do we have? We've got two people in the office, Jamie and Kayla. We literally couldn't do what we do without them. They run everything.
They're your brain.
They are.
I've heard that spoken before.
It is. It's true. Yeah. Better even. Yeah. And so they run everything. And then we've got, what am I going to say, about I guess we're at about 10, 9 or 10 wilderness instructors. And 2, 3, maybe another 10 kind of on the canoeing side. That's and huge. A lot of them double team, right? Like they'll kind of do both jobs, but yeah.
As far as paddle programs go in BC, I assume it's going to be one of the bigger outfits.
Yeah, there's definitely some amazing, you know, outfits. But, you know, on the island, you've got Strathcona and a bunch of other groups that are, you know, they've got some big capacity, right? Mm. We've definitely got a pretty massive capacity with our big canoes. We can get almost, you know, 300 on the water at once, you know, when we're allowed to without COVID. And yeah, I'm just trying to think, we've got maybe 20 tandem canoes, and yeah, so yeah, lots of capacity that are run programs.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. And the Voyager canoes, like for mm-hmm. a little bit of the history, that's kind of a time-honored thing that's going back, you know, yes. like way, way, way back to yeah. our ancestors all over across Canada and across
yeah.
the world.
Yeah.
And so those are holding a lot more people. So is that, have you found that that's been kind of a neat connection with the school system and yeah, stuff for like kind of yeah. doing the education side of that?
Yeah. And I think it's you take one guide, right? So one person knows what they're doing, and then you can get a bunch of kids in there and get them on the water in a safe way and get them to see things that they normally couldn't, right? Whereas when you put them into tandem canoes or kayaks, you kind of get that herding cats, right? You're like, they're all across the water.
We just let them all
gone. What do we do? Most of them are back. It's okay. We're fine.
That's right.
Yeah, whereas with the Voyagers, you can, you can keep them together a bit more. So, yeah.
I only worked with tandem canoes. Like yep. when I worked at camp, that was yep. something that we only used because, you know, we would do canoe races. So you'd load everybody up and paddle with your hands yes, or whatever,
absolutely.
Right? But yep. the capacity was so much smaller. And so, yep. you know, I really identify with that. Let them all out and see where it all
see
goes.
See where it goes.
We were always lucky. We had a southeast wind. So it always blew everybody
them back.
Back.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah. End of the day, it would just turn around and they'd call them all back. But what I loved, I only did the one guiding outfit with you guys using those Voyager canoes, yeah. but how the mechanics of the entire thing changed.
Yes.
And not only did the mechanics change, but the teamwork dynamic.
Yes.
So incredible, yes. you know, from something that was a traditional need or necessity in yeah. our culture where we're getting from A to B, we're doing portage routes, which are absolutely phenomenal, especially in the East Coast. Like,
yeah.
you know, we have a few here on the island, but absolutely incredible what you can do with that. But the team dynamic was so fun.
It is so
fun. And that's, you know, something that I think you guys have also brought into the culture of your business, which
yeah.
is also super, super fun, you know, yeah. paddling the gorge in Victoria, like,
yes.
oh man, so much fun.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
it's great.
Well, and I think it's, especially for kids, I think there's so few activities, you know, because we're all, you know, screen time and stuff where mm. you get this immediate feedback mechanism, right?
Mm.
If we paddle together, we work.
Yeah.
If we don't paddle together, we don't. And it's immediate. They can yeah. see it. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And a lot of value for teaching that as a class too. Like just seeing yeah. the teachers even afterward too, right?
Yeah.
There's so much value for them to be able to take and use that word picture, not even the word picture, but the actions
yeah.
that everybody got
for
to participate
sure.
in.
Yeah.
And then
when I think you hit it, I think it's too, is it's almost like it's the vessel to, you know, what do you want to deal with? What do you want to talk about? Is mm-hmm. it, you know, do you want to do teamwork? Do you want to talk about, you know, first people? Do you want to talk about the Coureur de Bois? Do you want to look at biology or geomorphology or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that through that canoe. And it allows for, yeah, it's pretty cool what it allows us to do.
And I'm also trying to remember, do you currently own Canada's biggest canoe?
I actually do.
And I remember you telling me the story
yeah.
about how you got
oh my
Canada's
gosh, this
biggest
hilarious.
Canoe.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the Voyager canoes hold, how many is it again?
Yeah, so well, the Voyager canoe, the Canoe du Nord, or the North canoe, it takes about, you know, 10 to 12,
mm-hmm.
and it's like 25 feet.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Montreal or the Canoe de Maître, which is the barge canoe that would have been on the east, you know, kind of in the Great Lakes. And most of those ones that we have, we've got a bunch of those, but they're 36 to the biggest one, which is 42 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and those ones take 20 people.
It's huge.
So they're massive, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a whole other undertaking. And then that's the biggest one.
That is, yes.
So you got to tell the story about
how you
became the owner of Canada's biggest canoe, because it's wild.
It is.
It's
well,
absolutely wild.
I think the funny part, it wasn't even built for us in Canada. It was built for Texas, which makes total sense.
Total sense. I mean, when I think canoeing, I think Texas, naturally.
So I guess there was a guiding outfit down in Texas, and they wanted to have a canoe that was obviously massive, the biggest one.
And that, it would that have, sounds like Texas.
It does.
That
it does. Part, they're like, we want the biggest one. Yeah. Yeah,
that makes sense.
And so they painted it with the American flag on one side and the Mexican flag on the other because it was going to go on the Rio Grande.
Oh, nice.
So it was going to be, you know, look, there's Mexico. Here's the States. And I guess the the specifics of this I may get slightly incorrect, but it's still amazing. Is that they didn't pay for the canoe. And so the owner of Clipper Canoes, who's amazing, was like, well, we need our canoe back. So they literally drove somebody down to repo this canoe down in Texas and to drive it back up. And as I just envision it, like that they're being chased, you know, by men on horses and, you know, like, I, you know, like that's
the revolvers were
really,
out.
The revolvers, they were the driving Colts. Slowly, but really I saw, yeah. And so then it comes back up here. And then at that time, the cruise ships had just signed to come into Prince Rupert. And so one of the people up there, Peter Loy, phenomenal fellow, he buys that canoe as well as has another one built that's a coastal design canoe that's, I think it was like 65 feet.
Wow.
And so they're doing trips with the cruise ships. Then the cruise ships stop. And so he's got this canoe and he's like, well, I don't know what to do with it. And so then shows Dave. And, you know, I fly up there, rent a truck, and just drive it back down. So now we've got this massive, amazing canoe.
Oh, it's so, so fun. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I guess what I kind of want to go to next is why? Why build a business around the side of first aid and canoeing? Like,
yeah.
I can kind of see from watching your journey a little bit.
Yeah, because you've seen it for a while. Which is cool.
Yeah. And it's been neat to see it evolve and see it grow. Like you guys were over at Haida Gwaii this last week, which was super cool to see, awesome. You know, doing all stuff, not just, you know, on the mainland and the island, but going even beyond that, which is cool. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a local boy for the island, but it just when Haida, when I think of Haida Gwaii, I'm like, that's like
the level. Other island.
Right. growing up, it's like always like, man, I want to go there. It just was that much more removed, more inaccessible and neat and stuff. And you've obviously got that kind of reach. So why build a company around that?
Sure. Well, I think the first part was just necessity, right? Mm-hmm. Like I look back and I did the outdoor rec program at Cap College at the time. Now it's Cap University. And so was guiding but there wasn't enough work. There's, you know, I was piecing it together with different groups and here and there, and there just wasn't enough work for it. And the fellow that I had been guiding with, he was letting his business, which really was, he had a one big canoe that he would do trips with. And then he'd purchased a bunch of Voyager canoes way back when. And he said, hey, do you want to buy these?
Hmm.
And so at the time, my wife looks at me and just goes like, yeah, you got to do this. Hmm. So it's all her. But otherwise, I don't even know what I'd be doing, right? And and so we ended up, you know, taking out a giant loan. I have no idea. I still don't know how they gave it to me. I must have been really sure.
We really love them.
Yeah, I just think back, right? I go and I have this meeting with the bank manager and I'm like, yeah, I'd like to take out a really big loan to buy some canoes. And they were like, all right, sounds good. So
it's just that easy, folks.
That's it. That's all I need to do. And so, you know, ended up buying the canoes again, just because there wasn't enough work. And I was like, we could make this work.
Mm.
And then as an ADD dyslexic fellow, the average way things were taught to me didn't work.
Mm.
And so I just flipped it a little bit to work the way it works for me. And apparently there's a lot of us because it worked.
Yeah.
And so the canoeing side and the first aid side picked off just because of those things.
And I think that's what's absolutely magic about the way that you've done it. Again, listening in, you may not have been able to have the privilege of seeing you at work, but I think that you're one of the best educators I've ever met. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Like, no, seriously, though, because the way that you were able to look at multi learning styles.
Sure.
And bring those together and, you know, I had a chance to going through your instructor course too. Yep. So kind of looking on that side of how you're applying this stuff, you know, inside of the first aid world, for example, so, so incredibly important because it's reaching a broader audience and it's being retained, you know? And so how did that come about for you designing that part of it?
Sure. I was really lucky, right? I had from the canoe side, the first instructor course I took was very rigid. And I took out a group of scouts and they hated it. They were like, I was looking at these kids and I was like, why aren't you enjoying this? And I was realizing I was teaching it awfully.
Mm.
And so tweaked it a little bit. But then I met a bunch of people, Tony Shaw and a couple of people who are instructors here on the island. And they they really had a different view as to how it should be taught. And then the same thing with first aid. The first Red Cross instructor school I taught was with these two people, Gil, and I can't remember the other gal's name, but for them, same thing. They had this view that our goal should be not what we know, but what we can get you to know. And how do we do that? And so then I just took those, you know, principles and, you know, tweaked them and applied them over the years to say, how would I learn this best? And that's kind of, you know, an ongoing piece.
That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, that's really, really awesome. So inside the first aid world, I mean, and having such a diverse amount of students, I'm sure you get some crazy questions.
Yes, we do.
You must.
Yeah,
always. You must. I mean, I probably ask some of them myself, to be honest, because like you just want to know. What are some of the kind of, you know, common misconceptions around first aid that you tackle the most? Like, what are some of the things that come up?
Well, I mean, there's two. There's the practical side where people look at it and say, well, I have to do it this exact way.
That's big.
Or they die, right? And so, and people let that paralyze them. And then there's the, you know, the other side where you just get these just awesome questions. You're like, are you being serious with that one? That was great. You're like, somebody asked, do we need our bones? And I was like, well, maybe we do.
I found them quite helpful in my experience so far.
Yeah. So I think for us, it's to go look, like, you're going to come across a problem and you have to see it through to the end. And so how are you going to be able to do that? And that's the basis of that instruction. And then you just build on that with the more skills you want to get.
Totally. Right. But, and that literal, I find that literal side of it, of saying, no, it literally has to be this way, was something that was really difficult to unlearn. Right.
Yeah.
Because when you're inside of the first aid world, you kind of, when you, when a crisis happens, right, which they all do. And if you've been a first aider, you know that they do. In those moments, you know, if you're just going through the motions. So a really good story I had was, it was crazy and it was really bad. We were doing a trip up to camp with all my staff in the middle of winter. And it was before we had a dash cam. What's that?
Always good.
Always good. I know. Always a really smart idea.
Yep.
And I looked at the forecast and it all looked good and I was really happy with it. And I was like, no, it's going to be nice. We're going to do a dip in the lake. You know, it's like, it's New Year's Eve. It's going to be amazing.
This is how all good stories start.
I know, right? I know. It's all really, really good. I was really naive. I don't want to say
but that's how we learn, right? It is. We totally do.
I feel like I shouldn't say how recent in my experience
this was yesterday.
Yeah, this was last week. So we're going down the road and we get to the top of the pass, of Menzies Pass, and it's icy glass.
Yeah.
And then it starts to snow. And we're like, oh no, this is really not going well. I'm in a two-wheel drive, 1988 Chevy, maybe 86. I think I'm being nice. And we're going down this turn. We're coming back down the hill. And then there's car stopped.
Yeah.
And so we're like, oh, okay. Well, what's going on?
This is slowing my swim down.
Yes, I need to be in the lake right now. It's snowing. This is prime time.
Yeah.
So we're going down to the side and I see this car over to the side and they're looking really concerned. Yeah. Like something bad's happened. So I'm like, all right, it's really bad here. Anyway, let's stop. So we go off to the side and we've probably got, I don't know, maybe 15 staff that are in different vehicles, right? So I'm like, all right, herding cats. Let's try to stay over here.
It's like tandem canoes. Exactly. Right. Yes. So
So to paint the picture, it's a big drop off the side. Like, I'm not sure how far it is, but it's enough that if it was a movie and the vehicle was going, it would get air.
Get air
and it would go a long
way. And
there'd
be time for you to have a conversation
with it'd be like, this is bad. So there's tracks off the side of this that are going down into these trees. And so I'm looking at this going like, I don't even know how I'm going to get down here just on my feet. So I get down there and we go down and say, all right, stay here, staff. We're going to go down here and check this out. And lo and behold, there's this other guy that's with these this couple that's gone right off. And miraculously, they've landed upright. Like way down in the trees.
Crazy.
And they're sitting there freezing cold because it's wet and it's cold. And so this fella is like sitting there, big eyes, and he's like, all right, so we got to get him out of the car. And I was like,
you're like, wait, just dial it back.
Just a second. They're talking and breathing to me. Let's see where this goes.
But the car's like, going to blow up.
Yeah, we got to do this right now. We got to get a blanket on the ground. We got to lay them down on the snow. It's pouring snow and rain at this point. Lay them down, and then we got to call 911. And I'm looking at this guy going,
No,
I'm afraid that's not what's going to happen here. Like,
but that's the first aid courses that people take.
Totally.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the problem that I found with a lot of it is that you take it so literally because it's beat into you. This is the way this has to be.
Yeah, for sure it is.
It has to be executed in a certain way. And with it, I understand the WCB side.
And I was going to say, especially like when you go to other provinces, they don't have work safe. Now, you know, we got to give them the credit they're due. They built when there wasn't some amazing courses,
sure,
right? Industrial first aid, occupational first aid at the time was kind of, it was the beacon, but it just didn't get changed. And it really, you're right. It drilled in, you have to be on your back. You've got to be flat or else how can we possibly work on you?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So no, and it does, it hamstrings people. They're like, I can't deal with you in the car.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. It puts a wrench in that entire system that you have built. Whereas I just love that.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I'll share one. Like, so I did my first, that first aid instructor school that I did, it was just becoming a 1 and 2 day first aid instructor. And I'm driving home. I'm feeling pretty good. There's a car accident in front of me. I literally see parts of cars like fly up in the air, a few cars ahead of me. And I was like, oh, I got this. So I guess, I feel like I should have a cape on, right? So I get out of the car.
You didn't have it with you.
I should have put it on.
You got your logo on it?
It was, okay, now this is new.
No, this
new
is Ridgewear. We're calling Kayla right after this and saying, hey, you got to go get on a cape. You keep going.
And so, no, I'm taking mental notes. And so I get out of the car. I've got my first aid kit. Make sure it's safe. Run up beside the car, and there's this lady, and she's windows all busted out, and she's bleeding from the side of her face. And I'm like, hey, and just before I get into it, I get broadsided by another first aider, literally like rugby tackled me out of the way, and he goes, I've got first aid, and so he starts working on this person, and obviously my initial response was, I'm gonna have to physically deal with this person, and I was like, no, wait a minute, we'll deal with that later. So I go work on somebody else. At the end, I come over and I ask him, I'm like, hey, buddy, like, what was that about? And he goes, I'm going to be honest with you. I was kind of freaking out. And I was like, so you thought your best option was to attack somebody that looked like they were helping? He's like, I don't know what was going on. So yeah, like people get, because he said to me later, he was like, I had been told that I had to go work on that person. Mm. It wasn't an assessment of what's going on or, you know, who else is there. So yeah, that's very it. It's this really rigid view how we had to do stuff. And I think it does. I think it messes people up.
Oh, totally. But, yeah. Oh, I totally do. And debilitatingly so sometimes, right? And you see things change over the years, which I always find is kind of a double-edged sword. Like I understand, you know, there's research.
Yes.
So anybody who's done first aid courses in multiple sections in a year or not in a year.
I love it when it goes away and then comes back later.
Right? And you're like, but I thought we just unlearned this.
But now we're taking it back.
Now we're going back. I mean, at least we're not bringing back pumping the legs.
Yeah. Well, listen, maybe. No.
So for those that don't know, pumping the legs, that was actually like...
And actually, I can share a personal story about this.
Please do.
So I'm in Australia. I don't know. I get bitten by something. I get a tropical bug. And so I'm walking across the pool deck feeling lightheaded and I pass out. And I hit the do not run sign with my head. Mm. So it slices open my head. I've still got a scar. And then I kind of bounce off of it and I hit a brick post. It almost takes my ear off. And I'm out. And I wake up on my back with a dude pumping my legs. And so, yeah, just like you said, so for those who don't know what this is, you could watch Dumb and Dumber because there's a scene in there that has it. But it's where they put the feet of the injured person on the person's chest and they lunge them towards the person to try and get blood flow back to the brain.
Naturally.
Yeah. And so I just remember every time he did that, I felt more blood pump out of my head onto the floor. And then I passed out again.
We have found the hose. And now we've opened it wide open. Yes. Well, this is all going so well.
Yeah, so that's not back, hopefully, ever. Yes.
No. So inside of, you worked alongside in Ski Patrol? Was it Ski Patrol?
No, it was, I ended up doing, like I say, expedition guiding. And then when I wanted to get my occupational or my urban first aid skills, I ended up working at Mills and then, which actually had no action until I worked at some punk rock concerts.
Says it hardcore first aid.
Yeah.
It was really boring.
It was super boring.
Nobody
got cut. There was no amputated body parts. But yeah, so I worked at the Warp Tour, which is like, you know, Pennywise and Rage Against the Machine and all of these epic punk rock. And those, we had like 15 spinals.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the span of an hour or two. And so,
this
yeah,
is
so
where that was
where you get your skills. Yeah. Yeah. So that's where I got that, you know, kind of practical skill for the urban side.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then inside, now I'm trying to remember the one for broken. What's kind of the biggest one that you've seen happen? I remember broken femur was the one.
Yeah, there was dislocated femur. I would say that would be one of the. Well, there's a bunch, but yeah, the dislocated femur was on a ski hill. Was just like we were literally just skiing, and this guy takes a jump beside us, doesn't land well, and I kind of yell, "Hey, you okay?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm good." So my friend and I are sitting there, we're talking, and he's still there on the ground. I'm like, "You all right?" And he goes, "I think I broke my leg." I don't know about you, but I think that I wouldn't just lay there. I would call for help. So I go over to this fellow, and his left leg, right leg, his feet are sticking straight up. It's normal. But his left leg, the feet are kind of pointed almost backwards. And
the wrong way.
Yeah, walking would be difficult. It's one forwards, one back, right?
Not working so well.
And so I do an assessment on him, and I find that the top of the femur is actually sitting in his butt cheek.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. And at the time we did, we don't do it anymore, but we did traction on things like this if there was circulation impairments. So I ended up kind of holding this guy's leg for 40 minutes, saw the circulation come back while ski patrol kind of was called. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Madness.
No, total madness.
Yeah.
Out of all your experiences, because you've had so many, what's some of the ones that you take away? You're like, this is something that really was foundational as far as like, kind of helping form the way that you approached first aid that helped you, that maybe, those that are looking to get into it could learn from, what are some of the more beneficial things that you've experienced that you would pass on to others that were looking to do that?
I think the Red Cross has done a really good job on making sure that the primary survey, which is just the survey you use to assess somebody quickly, it flows well. But I think for me, it was over the years applying the rigid formula that had been taught to me and seeing that it really had some failures to it. Mm. As in, when you approach somebody, you need to do an assessment on them and then obviously follow that ABC set of steps. But you have to be able to be fluid. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to assess like what's going on with this person, what's going on with the environment we're in, what's going on with my group, what's going on with me. Mm. Things that you don't typically think about.
Yeah.
And I would say that the biggest takeaway for people listening would be to say, look, when you're in those situations, make sure that you're doing internal checks to see how you're doing. Mm. Because if you get hurt, everything's bad.
Totally. So, and where a lot of other issues really stem from, right? Yeah. Because that's where I find that a lot of people start losing their heads, and then now all of a sudden they're the patient.
Yeah.
They're the person who's now in trouble and in causing even more problems, which is a tough thing to teach, I imagine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is. And I think also, right, when you're teaching that, is to go, especially when we specialize in wilderness first aid, is saying you're not with somebody for 5 minutes. Mm. You're with them for hours or days. Mm-hmm. And so how do you deal with those initial problems, which are fast and some of them are nasty, mm-hmm. and then go, okay, we got to be with you for, you got to switch gears. How are we with you now for, the next day or two or six or whatever, and keep yourself okay, keep your team okay. And yeah, that's really the tricky part, I think.
And a huge part of the structure of the program too, which I really appreciated coming from running outdoor programs, was seeing that side of it going, that's the stuff that we really need to, think about, because it's one thing to be able to like, all right, we've got to put pressure here. We might have to, staunch this blood here, or we might have to put this back together or help this person with this medication.
Yeah.
But then that whole other piece of the leadership component is so incredibly important that part is a huge foundational piece to that course, which I find, it must not be for everybody. I mean, you must see like a lot of people that kind of go, now what? Right. Yeah. And so how do you handle that kind of thing? Right?
Well, two things with that. The first one, I had this one of my first occupational level 3 instructors, awesome, like legendary firefighter. And he, what he would do is he would put up these pictures on the table at the beginning of class. And they were real injuries that he had dealt with. And he'd say to the class, all right, everybody, come on over, take a look. And then he'd kind of step back and he'd watch. And anybody that leaned forwards to see what the pictures were, he would kind of make a mental note. Anybody that turned away, he would ask them to step outside and then tell them that they probably shouldn't continue.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, wow, this is insane. And he's like, no, they're not going to make it. And so there's that viewpoint. And then that really, I think, turned a lot of people off.
Sure.
Opposed to saying, all right, well, look, you haven't seen these things before. Let's get everybody together and, you know, see how we can work on it.
Like giving somebody the house plans to a house and going saying, you know, go nuts. All the tools are here. Everything, you know, we're not going to show you how to do anything else, but that's what needs to happen. Like people are going to walk away opposed to the entire, you know, apprenticeship program that's going to happen.
Well, and then the other piece to it was going, I think we do a disservice, especially in Canada, where our distances are great, right? And even if you're driving from Comox to Campbell River or, you know, down to Victoria, there are so many spots where you're 20 minutes, an hour, more than that, away from help, you know, or you're going from Chilliwack to Hope or Hope to Merritt. And all of a sudden, your urban first aid course, which does, it does a beautiful job
within that
An urban structure.
Yeah.
Works great, but as soon as you step out of that, your skill set lacks in the side that you don't know quite how to deal with this longevity that you're with this person.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and with that, I always thought everybody should take the, you know, a basic wilderness because it makes you think, or remote, it makes you think about those pieces.
Yeah. And even just that as a basic leadership skill set too, because I feel that that's a part that's so debilitating for some people. You know, maybe they want to get into that. Maybe that's something that they have a passion for. You know, I want to take my buddies. I want to go and do these trips and stuff, but you know, not necessarily feeling like they have all the tools, but then doing something as simple as a first aid course, which I mean, simple is kind of relative. It's not that simple, but at the same time, it's such a wonderful tool.
It is. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's a couple people, you know, in the Red Cross that worked really hard, especially in BC, to be able to get the remote, the wilderness, and wilderness first responder program some equivalency within the occupational side. And for those of you listening that don't know what that is, it's simply saying you could take now a wilderness first aid course and it will work at your work. And so they open that door up. And so I think, you know, over the last 5 years, we've seen, you know, going from a, like 100 or 200 people in courses to thousands, right, in a year. And just seeing that people are having a good time. They're coming back going, I actually helped somebody. And just opening that door up, that's a big deal.
Making it accessible and hopefully helping, you know, those situations you know, you're not necessarily going to have to call search and rescue.
Yeah, for sure.
Whatever's needed for that. No, that's awesome. So, I mean, we're flying. We're always flying.
That's it.
This is the part of the episode for anybody listening when I say to the other person, we're flying, man.
We're flying. And we're having beverages and it's lovely. It's great.
So for you, what's happening with Ridge currently for this summer? There's so many programs, I'm sure. A lot of it's probably already mostly booked. But even so, I'm sure you've got opportunities. What is it that's looking for Ridge Wilderness for this summer?
There you go. Well, you know, we're really blessed. We've, you know, we've had Kayla now for 4 years. She's our general manager. She runs the show. And then we were lucky enough to bring on Jamie, and she came on about a year ago. And so she's doing the outreach and the sales. And so what we're seeing right now is really this. We've got a lot of first aid courses going on, and we've opened up the breadth of where they're happening. And so we've always had them, you know, kind of Nanaimo, Victoria, Vancouver, Langley, and Chilliwack. And so we still have those happening all the time. And then we're also, again, we were just up in Haida Gwaii. We had a bunch of courses up there, which was great.
So cool.
And then into Kamloops and Prince George and Dawson Creek and all over. And so, yeah, so there's lots of, you know, first aid happening, which is great. And then we've got our big canoe programs that are running full swing, you know, thankfully with COVID kind of, you know, it's gone, right?
That's what we're saying.
We don't talk about it anymore. Yeah, so we've got all those happening. Then our summer programs, which will, you know, we've got mostly the Lower Mainland this year. We'll probably look at the island again next year.
Nice.
And then our actually a really cool piece that we just got told. So we, during COVID, we were the only company that was able to offer overnight programs for kids. So we got the okay from the Public Health Authority, Bonnie Henry, to do that. And those were Duke of Ed programs.
Right. Talk Duke about of that Edinburgh. Program a little bit.
Yeah.
I've been surprised how many people don't know about
it. So the Duke of Edinburgh Awards are awesome. They are a set of three awards, bronze, silver, gold, that, you know, students can take. And there's three prongs. And I don't want to bastardize it, but the one that we help them with is the adventurous component. And so we've just signed a contract with the Duke of Ed office. So the only business in BC offering those programs.
Right on.
And they've just come out with this affiliate grouping. So yeah, that's was awesome. Literally yesterday we got that.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, and that was all Jamie. She's been working on that. Like, so I'm not taking any credit there. It was great. But yeah, so that's a pretty exciting piece. And so we'll be running those. Where are we doing this year? We're doing Pitt Lake, Alouette Lake. I think we're doing one in Cowichan or two in Cowichan, and then near Kamloops. I can't remember. Oh, maybe up at like the Shuswap Lakes up there.
Nice. But yeah. Right on. Oh, yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I cannot thank you enough for taking the time. You are one of the busiest men I think I've ever met.
It needs to slow down, but right.
I know. I remember like one first aid course, and I think that you had like, I don't even know how many courses or things you had going on, but
there was
your phone
was
like going off nonstop with InReach calls and all these things. And you're like, wow, that's super cool. And then 5 minutes later, you're like, that's got to suck.
That's not. I need a nap.
Exactly. But so appreciate what you're doing and cannot speak enough to the programs that you guys have put together.
Appreciate
and
that.
Especially what you have done, Dave, because I mean, I have had the privilege of being in those courses, but I cannot speak highly enough of them because just the way that you're able to bring that educational component. You've talked about it,
sure.
But I just love the way that you're able to make it accessible.
Excellent.
You're able to have it in a targeted way that it's not just, for the super outgoing and want to do everything person. You're able to reach way more with the way that you structured your programs.
Yeah.
And I cannot recommend what you're doing enough.
Well, I appreciate you doing this. This is my first one of these, and awesome.
I think you really well.
Listen, I think just the two of us, right?
There's
a chemistry here. It's working.
We go on the road.
We get a morning show.
That's right. Totally. I love it. The Wilderness Morning Show.
That's right.
It's our future.
Yeah, it is.
Or we'll just do it when we're retired.
Yeah, that's it.
We'll meet back in too many years.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Dave.
Thanks so much.
Really appreciate it.
Right on, man.
Thanks so much for listening this week on the Wild Islander podcast with David Wooldridge. If you want to go check out everything that Ridge Wilderness has to offer, whether you're going to get into paddling, whether you have first aid, whether you're maybe just doing it for your workplace, maybe you're doing it for yourself and your own skill set, they have something for you. Go and check out their stuff at ridgewilderness.com, where you can find all of the different adventures available and programs that are happening this spring and this summer every year. Go check them out. They will definitely meet your expectations. Absolutely fabulous staff, absolutely amazing people, and I cannot thank them enough for all of the work that they're doing. Thanks so much for joining us here on the show, and we're looking forward to next week. We'll have a brand new episode that we're getting close, people. It's almost at the end of season 2, so looking forward to seeing who's coming on next week.